last for long, and we dream of better morning when mama sang a song. Now I can't recall the words at all. It don't make sense to try, 'cause I just knew lots of love came through in that rock and roll lullaby. And she'd sing, "Shine the night, 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 and the night'll be alright. Shine the night, 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 and the night, I just hold on tight." I can hear your mama.
Hi, this is What's Happening. I'm Mike Stewart.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Mark Sutton.
I'm Bob Gifford.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's Happening? We're on WMFO, Medford.
Yes. And should you take this microphone? We slide all of these over like
so? We can do that.
What do you think of this?
I think
then you're going to need this, Mike. You're going to need this because that goes.
No,
with
I
that,
get this
right?
one. Yeah.
So,
okay, today in the studio, we have Locating Rolly. They have a brand new CD out called Crazy Parade. And you might know them from some of their former incarnations. They started probably late 70s in a band called the Rings of Saturn. And
yes,
then they
at
got
the
signed.
Thayer Street Loft, yep.
Yeah. And then they got signed to MCA Records and did a couple records for them and changed the name to Rings. And later on, I think they were the Bamboo Gang and the Wickerman, if I'm correct.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
That's exactly correct, in that order.
Yeah. So, excuse me. We are here today at WMFO, 91.5 FM in Medford, and we are web streaming.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yes, it is. It is. So, we're going to probably start off and give a little brief history of where it all started. Like we were talking off here.
Well, do you want to know where Locating Rolly started, or do you want the whole thing from A to Z, soup
well,
to nuts?
Good luck.
Yeah.
Best way to do it, if I can hear myself, the best way that I like to do it is where you began. So where you started, what you listened to growing up, what were your influences, who were your influences, and then bring it on to where...
Well, I can say, speaking for myself as a guitar player, what brought me to Boston in the first place was the Berklee College of Music. In terms of what I was a Led Zeppelin guy versus a pop music guy coming from the New York, New Jersey area. So I listened to WNEW versus the pop radio. So that would be my musical background. And did we meet, Bob, at the Periodical Publisher Service Bureau? Or were you part of that? Or did I just meet you through Larry?
You met me both. You met me through Larry, and I did serve time.
Okay. So let me turn it over to Bob, and he can get you up to where he came from. But the Rings, for example, is one of the bands we're going to talk about, and Bob is certainly the musical heart and soul of that piece. We'll get back to that in a minute.
Yeah, so I was basically always played very bad guitar. It was one of my strengths, I think. Just kidding. I was in a number of bands, and I wrote and sang music, but played a bad guitar, and I hooked up with Mark and a couple of other musicians, and we used to sit around this place we all shared in Jamaica Plain, which we called Belle Reve, and we just kept playing, and we really enjoyed it, and we just sort of evolved from there. Basically, I learned to play bass from Mark and Michael Baker.
Yep. And Bob Woodbury was the original drummer for the Rings.
Yeah.
But the other thing to know about this time in the world was that the Boston music scene was exceptionally vibrant. There were clubs everywhere. We're talking about 1978 through... The Cars had just gotten their deal. The place was hot, and there were so many places to play original music. It was just like nothing else I'd ever seen. And so we were encouraged by guys like Richard Randall, who was in the original Baby's Arm.
Yeah, rest in peace.
He became Classic Ruins. He just said, get out there and do it. So that's what we did with the Ring. So we became who we were, not so much only in the basement, but also just getting on the stage and going from there.
Yeah.
And so that was the band that probably was the most notorious for us in terms of our experience, in that we did manage to get a deal with MCA Records. We made two albums for them. We got to do all of the things that that you would think of. We made the video. We did the tours. We did every little piece of it. So we got to experience all of it except the money, I think, right?
I think the money and the huge, overwhelming fame.
Yes.
But other than that...
Other than the money and the overwhelming fame.
And you were at the beginning of videos.
Oh, yes.
Like the first year MTV, the first or second year, definitely.
Well, there's a story for that if you're interested.
Because
V66.
V66.
Yeah.
Before, it was here. We had it for a year or two, and then it was gone because they got a better deal.
Right.
It was a nice try.
Well, but actually, it was pre-MTV.
Pre-MTV, yeah.
You know, and that's a cool thing.
But we made a video for MCA, and as this will probably come as no surprise to you in terms of how record labels thought about these things, but they felt that giving videos to, I guess there were seven big labels at the time, and they felt that giving videos to MTV was not right. And so they tried to do something to get MTV to pay for that content, and while they would give them Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers video, they held ours back just to see what they could do to leverage a few things. So it's those kinds of funny things happen along the way, but I found that story to be hysterical.
Yeah, that didn't work.
But you can see that video up on YouTube, and I have no idea how it got there.
Yeah. But it is on YouTube.
It's there.
Oh, yeah, it's many, many plays,
Was it played on V66?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I know that we did a live show or two on V66.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure we did that. Well, a bunch of bands at the time
did that.
That
was an interesting pink building, wasn't it?
I don't remember the building.
The building off of Speen Street in Framingham, and it was a pink building, pink square, and it was on the top floor.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was V66. It was a long time ago, dear Bobby.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Somebody had a late-night TV show that used to bring Boston bands on, too. Was it Lacadera or somebody else?
I don't recall the specifics of it. And I know we didn't do it. At least not with the Rings.
Yeah.
And so, following that, we had our chance at it, and Bob and I... talked about what we wanted to do next, and that's what led us to Bamboo Gang. And the musical impetus behind that, because it was a pretty sizable band. It was two guitars, bass, drums, and keyboards with background vocals and the whole bit. And the reason that we went with such a large band is we didn't want any constraints on what we were able to do.
Live.
And to varying degrees, we succeeded in that. But to bring it up to the Locating Raleigh piece... after that Bamboo Gang ran its course, we had a band called The Wicker Men, and that was a power trio. Very, very different, very loud, very snotty. Different kind of songwriting, but again, that was me and Bob. And what you hear on Locating Raleigh and the album Crazy Parade...
Matt Thurber and John Neidhart, too.
Yeah, they were also in
The Wicker Men.
Yeah. But what Locating Raleigh is completing the circle. it's finishing what we started. These songs that are on here are songs that we did not have the opportunity to finish for time, money, whatever the reason may be. They were demos, they were rehearsal tapes, they were a number of different pieces. And now with the new technology and the what you can do in terms of making... Bob lives in Gardner, Massachusetts, and I'm living in Haverhill now. And we recorded our parts separately in different places and put them together into one master, a lot of it. And so that's these songs here are a combination of all three of those bands.
Yeah, because we had... Basically, we had songwriting. I think we had a bunch of songs put together by a friend of ours, and I think there were 65, 70 songs in the book, and those are the songs that made it. I mean, there are 20 to 30 songs to 40 songs that are fragments, phrases, ideas. They never make it. They never even make it to rehearsal. But these are the songs that actually get formed out, and we would bring them to rehearsal and, you know, get a thumbs up or a thumbs down from the band. So basically, I have about 60 to 70 songs completed, and I won't tip our hand too much. We haven't talked about this album, but we're already working on the second album. We already have a number of songs recorded.
Congratulations.
For that. We're not stopping.
Is there anybody out there right now playing your music?
Or
that
you're about
that
to.
You've played, that you, besides me. You have authored any songs for?
Oh, written for other people?
Yes.
Not that I'm aware of. Meaning if there's a band out there that's playing a Ring song or a Bamboo Gang song or a Wicker Man song.
Well, they will be.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
That would be enjoyable.
And the name of the band?
Yes.
How did you come up with it?
Well, I'll let Bob take this. We needed to have a name for the project, and Bob came up with a number of names. The second runner-up was The Preeners. I thought that would have been a good name for a band. Bob came up with that. But we went with Locating Raleigh, and Bob will give you the history of that.
Yeah, well, it dawned on us that, let's just be Bob and Mark, or Bob Gifford, Mark Sutton, whatever. And we said, well, let's... you know, reach for the next low-hanging fruit. And so I said, that'll be easy. So I came up with a list of 15, 20 names. And before I sent them off to Mark, I said, well, I'm just going to do the Google thing, you know. And lo and behold, every dang one of those was already a band up and running. So it's unbelievable. And I challenged the audience at home in their living room, write down a list of 5 names and then go Google it, and you'll probably be able to buy their album. It was a crazy thing. So I was just trying to get very, very esoteric. And Raleigh, I referred earlier to to a place where we came together and actually the Ring started. One of the roommates there was a gentleman named Raleigh, and he passed way too soon. And just the idea of getting back to that time of energy and inspiration and creativity. It was a wonderful time in our life, it just seemed fitting somehow that this was a name that sort of honored that and brought us full circle.
So what we're doing now is we are trying to locate Raleigh. Locating Raleigh.
Or the feeling.
Yeah.
That time.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. And there's the first song.
Blue on Blue.
Blue on Blue.
Blue on Blue is a song that I've talked to other members of Bamboo Gang. It was a Bamboo Gang era song. I remember recording. You were living in South End at the time. Mm-hmm. We were using the Fostex 4-track and a CR-17, I think it was, drum machine to make that thing happen. And so we put it all together, and I don't remember ever playing it out, but Joe Wolvek, one of the other guitar player in Bamboo Gang, says we did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall it, but we started with that demo, and we finished it. And what I mean by that is that oftentimes when you have something like a rehearsal tape or a demonstration piece or whatever, or even when you go into a formal studio environment, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to take what's there. Like the lyric may not be done yet, the melody might not be done, the form might not be the way you need it to be. And
you just slam it through anyway. You don't take the time.
You're grabbing the spirit of the song.
Yeah. And so what we did in this case is this one's finished. We got this one done, and this is what's nice about everything on this Locating Raleigh album is that everything is exactly the way we want it to be, which is not common.
Yeah, we don't have the time constraints. You remove that, and then you can get to, you know, there's also, I mean, part of the process, you're talking about process now, but part of the thing that we realized was that we always were rushed. You know, you'd go in and, hey, guys, maybe we should rehearse another 3 weeks before we came in. Well, we're here now. And the lyrics, well, they're good the way they are now. There's never enough time. You spend 4 days, for God's sake, setting up the drums. And then, hey, we got to lay some lead vocals down. You have 2 hours. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's the constraints of paying the huge fees that we used to pay. And we recorded at Electric Ladyland, Jimi Hendrix's studio, R.E.P. Jimmy. And, I mean, you're in there, and you want to get that sound. You want the room. You're trying to, use all of the leverage everything you can about the atmosphere, and you spend a lot of time setting up drums, for example.
To give you a perfect example of how things are different now, and in a very good way, in terms of digital recording. With the song Do Not Tear Down, which is on the Locating Raleigh album, that was also a Bamboo Gang song, I just needed a lead vocal to be able to do something with it, and I said, Bob, sing the lead vocal on this, and he was sick as a dog. So he sang this horrible sounding vocal. But all he did, he just took it, wave file, dumped it up to Dropbox. We brought it down. I put it in. I started doing my work to the song, just securing the knowledge that he can go back and sing it again anytime he wants. It didn't have to happen right there. I just needed to know where it was going to go. And some of that performance, Bob, is still on that song.
And we're sinking your honor right now.
Some of that performance is still there. Try to defy anybody to figure out which it is.
When Bob was talking about, how things were in the studio back then, I got to preview the Boys from Nowhere, the film about the punk explosion
in
Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will be out, hopefully maybe by the end of the summer.
I thought it was out.
I
just saw the trailer.
You saw the trailer. Well, basically it was, but it's being revamped.
Yeah, cool.
Some digital HD footage and maybe little pieces here and there.
Throwing some B-roll.
The thing that I found really interesting, and I kind of always suspected that once the Cars had broken out, the pressure that was put on the Nervous Eaters to be the next Cars.
Sure.
And I wonder if it fell on your laps and other laps of other bands because, as the business goes, they want to be what is successful, and successful was the last band that just was successful.
Exactly. I'll let Bob speak for himself, but I know that for me, what I was excited about was the fact that we were in such a rich environment to be able to have labels coming into Boston looking for something to make money with.
Yeah.
And so I didn't feel so much the pressure to be something. Mm. I was just excited that there were so many eyeballs on all of us.
Yeah.
I do know what you mean, though, with the Nervous Eaters, and that album that they made, I think they got signed to Elektra.
Yes.
Somebody made some decision about wanting it to be more of a pop album than being a rock and roll. I mean, that band is one of the greatest rock and roll bands that ever came through the city of Boston, and that album didn't sound
that.
Like the Nervous Eaters.
Hello,
just
Steve,
head because I'm in a rush. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Great, I
literally put it on, and I kept pulling it out and looking at it, go, no, this is going to be packaged wrong or something.
Yeah. But the Nervous Eaters, the Real Kids, the Dogs... Yeah. Classic Ruins,
La
Baby's Arm before that. Oh, La Pest, forget about it.
Yeah.
This was some rockin' time.
I know.
It was something.
I think compared to other parts, L.A. had this scene in Georgia and New York, but we had a pretty damn good scene here.
We still do.
Yeah.
We still do.
Are we going to play a song after that?
We will in a moment.
Yeah.
You're listening to What's Happening here at WMFO. I'm Aaron.
I'm Mike.
I'm Mark.
I'm Bob.
And there's...
Mark.
Mark, wait a minute.
That's we have.
Good evening, everybody.
That's Mark Hurlowitz over there. And just give a brief who you are and what you do, Mark.
Oh, yeah. I'm on with Mike Newman every few weeks. And, we do the free form thing like Mike always does. And I also do some other work on another radio station. I don't know if I should mention it. But
it's all right.
Yeah. Go for it.
Okay.
I do.
I do some work with Jordan Rich on WBZ. We do Connoisseur's Corner.
Oh, I love that. Love Connoisseur's Corner.
And, we have 90 seconds. We totally wing it. We don't have any scripts, and sometimes I really mess up. He never messes up. I sometimes do. And also, I'm a food writer, so when I'm on with Mike Newman, we talk about restaurants and stuff like that. So
yeah, we'll be hearing from Mark a little bit later.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Bring anything to eat, or just keep it all to yourself.
He's bringing pictures so we can salivate.
His pictures of food.
Yeah. So we'll be back in one moment.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom. Everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Yes, you're listening to What's Happening. I'm Mike.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Mark Sutton.
And I'm Bob Gifford.
And I am Mark Hurwitz. Oops, let's try that again. I am Mark Hurwitz.
Okay, we just heard a tune off of the brand new CD. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah,
the
song is Blue on Blue. And we were talking about before putting it in and playing it, is it was originally came out of a Fostex 4-track, and Bob had it in his massive collection of everything that we've ever done, which I can't appreciate enough. And so we went to work putting it together and finishing it up, and now we're quite happy with what it is that you just heard, and I hope you are too.
You said you are really, both you guys really enjoyed the recording process now versus in the old days where you're under the restraints of money and time.
Yes. You got something to say on that, Bob? I've got too much to say on it.
I mean, you can now work like with a scalpel as opposed to an axe. As I said, there were just so many responsibilities coming in and trying to get things done in a very, very limited amount of time, and because of that, things suffered. Time, removing the money from that, it gives you the time. The other side of that is I think you can spend too much time. I think there is something that works well in track limitation. That might be a personal thing. I think having 75 tracks can be, well, let's put the whistle in. Let's put three whistles. We're going to.
How about the glockenspiel?
Yeah, let's put the glockenspiel. I mean, so you have to have some constraint, and it's really good to have some outside ears listen to what you're doing as you're going along. But you certainly can take the time and get things right. And it was really important on this. This is like a body of work that encompasses a number of different music styles. Some of the music, I think everything here
was played out, or at least on a demo tape. Some of the other music we have never saw the light of day, but as I said, we have plans on, we're still working, we're still recording now, and that'll be coming out. But I loved the process. I really liked the process. It allowed me to, we started doing this about 2.5-3 years ago, and the years flew by, 3 years flew by, but it allowed us to do something that just because of our lives and where we are and our different lives, we wouldn't have been able to do this collaboration. And I mean, I just think it's fantastic. So,
yeah. Two words, copy and paste. That's what you can do now. Mm. You used to have to take a roll of 2-inch that cost $125. Yeah, you could take something and you could take the guitar solo, for example, and roll it off on a 1/4-inch, and somebody would break out the razor blade, and they would chop it up, and it was amazingly time consuming, and sometimes didn't work at all, and everything that you can do now, and what recording music is now more like drawing than it ever was before.
I think the good thing though is that what you have for your originals doesn't get destroyed by creating the new art form.
There's that. Yeah.
I mean, if you, like you're saying, taking on a razor blade, whatever you did is now gone because it's not what you created, even if they try to put it together.
That's very true.
So, that would be your fourth or fifth album. Release of the bits and pieces of your songs, and call it bits and pieces.
It's funny that you should say that, because if you go to the Locating Raleigh website, which is locatingraleigh.com, the way we are promoting this is through Facebook and through through folks like you. And we post the original demo next to the finished work.
Yeah, or if it was a live tape.
So if it's a band playing in a rehearsal space and Bob forgets the lyrics in the second verse of Animal Boy, Machine Head Man, then that's what happened, and that's what's going to be up on the website. So we're gonna continue to do that with everything that we record.
It's kind of fun. You can do it before and after.
I think that's really important because, you know, the process. Because up and coming artists have no idea what it was like then. Mm-hmm. They know what it's like now. Mm-hmm. And this will actually hopefully bring more people your way by listening to it, saying, you know.
Well, to understand where it comes from. It started with a sketch and it became a finished painting. And that's and you get to hear the beginning and the middle and the end of it. There's the other thing, though, that I would also say to new bands, to new aspiring bands, in terms of what I've learned from this way of working, because this recording technology, I put a lot of these basics together and then asked Bob. I said, do you want to re-record songs that we'd recorded before? And Bob said, why do we want to re-record things we've already recorded? Why don't we, you know, finish the things that we didn't finish before? And that's how we began this process. And the fact that we could work from afar, meaning that I could get a vocal from Bob or a musical performance of any kind and just slip it on in and go from there. We didn't have to be in the same room with each other. There's that. And so here's my recommendation to new bands, which is, it's one thing to have all the players and the songwriters and the musicians. Obviously, that's what makes a band. But I would spend a little time trying to bring somebody into your organization that understands how to use digital audio workstations and people who know how to put visuals for the YouTube part of what happens now, and have those people come in and be as an important piece of your band as the rest of you, because otherwise you're still going to have to break out the checkbook, go to a recording studio, and start spending some money. Whereas in this case, if you bring the means of production, as they say, inside, I would urge every new band to at least examine that idea.
Yeah, spend your time on, you know, writing a draft and tearing it up, and you don't have to worry about that deadline. You don't have to worry about the song form being finished by X date. You can try the song and you can rearrange very, very quickly and
at your own pace with no money being spent.
Yeah, and you can use it for writing. It's a great writing tool too. So
I know somebody's going to, after we finish the interview, is going to ask me why I didn't ask this question we had talked about earlier. What is the status of the old recordings here? Will there anything ever be done to it? Who owns it? Is it accessible? Will anything happen?
Yes.
Or is it locked in a vault and we'll never see it again?
No, if you go back to The Rings and you go up to iTunes and you put The Rings into iTunes, you will see both of the MCA albums up there, and they're available for purchase. Now, how they got Bob and I stood next to the 2 inches that those things were recorded on. I have no idea where what kind of journey they've been on, whether they went out to Los Angeles or who knows where. But somebody has it. How it got there, I don't know. I know that the production company we were signed to is not in existence anymore. So somebody's got it. No one has called me and Bob to find out where they should send the royalty checks. So
I was going to mention that. Never mind.
But it's like the great artists and inventors of our time. Da Vinci and Picasso and Michelangelo.
And Bob Gifford.
And they had their sketchbooks, and which is what you have on your uncompleted, which are now being completed, music.
I think that's great. You can go into the past, and there's something going, I wish we had finished that song.
Yeah. I'm sure other people have done this, but I think it's one thing that it's kind of a part of our story, what you're doing. I'm surprised more bands aren't doing it, and that's why it was important for us to let's show our stuff, let's show the 4-track, let's show this, and here's where it came from. But this all also had to do with, even though there were different bands, it came back to Mark and I collaborating, and we're talking now over a 25-30 year period. There's a sort of a songwriting team with other input from the bands. I write a little bit about that on the website, the process.
Finishing what we started, and I also would be remiss if I did not point out the second Rings album, second MCA Rings album, that album cover was done by an artist named Larry Blamire. This is Larry Blamire as well. This whole idea of the long distance ability to communicate and collaborate is fascinating. We got a hold of Larry. Obviously, we're all connected via Facebook, and said, "What do you think?" And he says, "I want to do this." And he sent us a bunch of artwork to choose from. And so now the front and the back cover of this particular CD was done by Larry Blamire. I happen to think it's brilliant. I think the guy's
the second special. Album. A Rhythm Method was a depiction of a dance hall.
Correct? Yes, that's yes. Then that's
like
Larry.
40s or something like that. What was the significance of the fork in the floor?
We're going to have to ask Larry that.
Okay.
I set him up with that one.
Did you?
I did have that concept for that, and I said, Larry, what I'm saying, I had the checkerboard down, I had the angle down. I said it's a conga line. They're having a great time. Yeah. They need something to celebrate with. They're on the way to a barbecue. So he put barbecue forks in everyone's hand, and it was that strange frisson of this looks kind of scary and psychotic and dangerous and funny at the same time.
The fork in the middle of the road.
The fork. There you go.
Well said.
The fork in the middle.
I would urge everybody though to Google Larry Blamire. He's also a filmmaker. He's got a bunch of great work out there. He's got his own voice. You're not going to run into anybody who thinks or writes like Larry does. He writes books. He's obviously great artist. And please, but check him out. He's something.
And which band which rendition of your band was Crazy Parade from?
Crazy Parade was a Bamboo Gang era song. It was originally called Amazing Parade, and it was played out live with that lyric, Amazing Parade. And one of the things that being able to take your time and to listen to your recording to know what you need to fix, meaning that comes with the new technology, is that we had Crazy Parade, and it ends up being, Amazing Parade. Amazing is a 3-syllable word, and you could not sing it. Live, it didn't matter. Live, you wouldn't notice it.
Yeah. You'd be bounce off the walls.
You'd be singing it, but when we put our headphones on, we said, no, this isn't working. And so I said, Bob, I need a 2-syllable word, and then I think we're done here. That was the fundamental change, a couple of other pieces, but that is how it got to be Crazy Parade. And then, of course, when we contacted Larry, we said we want to call the album or the collection. I think you can still call a collection of music an album, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe folks are using different
words. There's debates where an LP ends and an EP begins.
An EP, it's still a collection, I suppose, and it's still an album. I don't know if
an album be 5 songs and an EP be 6 songs?
And that's, I guess the answer is yes. Yeah. It could be whatever you want to say it is.
Well, basically, the way I look at it, it works out great because what you guys are on is one crazy parade.
And how.
And I imagine there's probably a lot of stories from touring.
Sure, we got a lot of those.
But
somebody's got to write the book.
We can't talk about them. We're just told we can't talk about them. So we can't talk about them. Oh, well.
Well, why don't we go back to the music?
Yes.
Thanks.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Mike.
Mark Sutton.
I'm Bob Gifford.
And Mark Horowitz.
And you're listening to What's Happening here on WMFO. Welcome back to What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
Mike.
Mark Sutton.
This is Bob.
And Mark Hurwitz.
And what did we just hear?
That is a song called Let Me Go. It is off of The Ring's first MCA album. It was the single that the label promoted. There's a video up on YouTube of us jumping around like crazy people, pretending to play live on to that song. And, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, Mike Baker is singing that. The Rings was a fun band, and we had three songwriters. We collaborated in the sense that we would bring in a song, and it would get a thumbs up or thumbs down. I'm interested, not interested, says the other members of the band. We'd work on it. But we sort of kind of brought things in, get gifts to the band, as you will. Does this pass muster? And then we would typically sing the song that we wrote. So Mark would sing songs he wrote. I would write songs that I wrote. And Mike Baker would write songs that he wrote. So kind of interesting. It didn't start out that way. I actually auditioned for a number of lead singers, but we weren't happy with anyone we found, so we ended up going that route. So I think it was, I'm glad that's what happened.
And the band members, the final lineup that recorded for MCA is me, Mark Sutton, Bob Gifford on bass, I'm playing guitar, Michael Baker is a guitar player, and Matt Thurber is the drummer for that band.
Good drummer.
An excellent drummer.
Yes.
He was also the drummer in the first drummer.
First drummer for Bamboo Gang. Yeah.
And he was also the drummer in The Wicker Man. So the three of us sort of kept that torch going for a while.
For those who are familiar with The Rings, Michael Baker's down in Nashville now, and he's still doing a good amount of production and other things. He's kept himself in the business, and he's still chasing that brass ring.
There you go.
Mark, you have a question?
What did that come out in the early 80s?
Yes.
Yeah.
I might have played that song when I was a DJ at Suffolk. I know that song. I'm very familiar with it. And we had a lot of local music, and I'm pretty sure we played that song at least a number of times.
First Rings album, I believe, the way it was told to me, was a top 10 album in New England. So we succeeded in New England and in various college markets around the country. You know, like Athens, Georgia, and Seattle, Washington. This is the way it was explained to me.
Those are real New England towns.
Well, what I mean is that...
Actually, we beat their teams. That's what we do.
So there were pockets where the band was successful. MCA did what they could. But in the end, we did not become a platinum-selling artist. But we did have quite an adventure. There was no doubt about it.
But after all this time, you guys are still together.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
Well, yep.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You know, there are a lot of bands that are here, they have their success, and then they're gone, and sometimes their success leaves with them.
Well, Bob and I did not work together for musically in any way, for at least we took a decade and a half off, right? I mean, we weren't doing anything along those lines, and I was amazed at how easily it all just fell back into place. It was like
great.
Falling off a log.
It's been great. What can I say? It gives me joy. It just gives me a lot of joy. It gives me a lot of happiness, and I'm digging it. I don't know.
It's food for the soul.
Well, we're very glad to have had you in today, and some of your stories. Any parting stories? We're talking about the quarter thing. Do you want to talk about that?
Be happy to tell that story.
Yeah.
The Rings, with their second album, the second album we did for MCA, we were managed by Premier, meaning they were the ones that booked us. And they sent us out with Blue Oyster Cult and Foghat. And
good choice.
The first show of that particular coupling was at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey. I think it's Passaic? Yeah, Passaic, New Jersey. I don't know if it's there anymore. The Blue Oyster Cult fans disliked us so intensely, they threw money at us. They threw coins at us, like quarters and dimes and nickels. And I'm talking about whipping money at us, not just, you know, taking their thumb and flipping a quarter at us. It was like, duck, a quarter's coming.
Yeah, and now, like, if they sent, you know, if they, like, put, like, packets of crispy, crunchy dollar bills up there, we would have left quietly without playing a single song. But no, whip that quarter. I think one caught Michael in the forehead. Sorry, Michael, if you're out there, if you're listening. And it was just like, this is not fun.
If you go back into the 60s and the 70s, I can remember as a boy going to the Fillmore East, and I would see so many odd configurations of bands. Taj Mahal playing with Cactus, if you recall that band from a million years ago.
Bands that you
wouldn't expect. Oh, is it the Spencer Davis Group, Taj Mahal, and Cactus was the lineup of one of the shows that I saw there. Crazy, but the audience loved that.
Yeah,
that was something they wanted to see.
Yeah,
if you take what we were considered at the time to be a new wave band or a punk new wave band, I never thought of us as a punk band, but anyway, that was the category we're in. You can imagine what a Blue Oyster Cult fan base would think of a new wave punk band. And so that's what happened in terms of how things changed in the 80s from the 60s and the 70s.
Like I said, they may have thrown their money at you, but you're spending it well now by putting out your music.
That's
and what did
kind.
They and what do they Thank have you. But to listen to your music now? What is your website? What is your new album? And where can they find you?
The website is locatingraleigh.com, and Raleigh is spelled R-O-L-L-I-E. And I think we can all spell locating. So
basically, if you learn to spell locating Raleigh correctly, and then do a plus sign with Facebook, or do a plus sign with SoundCloud, or do
SoundCloud.
A .com, you're going to find us, because I made a good choice on locating Raleigh. There was no other band named Locating Raleigh, so that was a good choice.
Thank you, Raleigh Kennedy.
Yep, thank you, Raleigh.
Well, thank you guys for coming in today. I really appreciate
thank you.
It. And hope we can hang in the suit, and you'll be up at WMWM soon.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you. You
it's
guys have been
a pleasure.
Great. Thank you very much.
Definitely a pleasure.
Yeah.
Mark.
Spotlight's on you.
All right.
Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. By the way, I just found this website, and that picture look familiar? Yeah, it's a website, gotthefever.blogspot.com. It looks like it's about Boston music from the 80s. And there's a page on the rings here. And at the end of the page, it talks about Duke and the Drivers. I hadn't heard that name
in a
long time.
Yeah.
They did that song, What You Got, I think.
I think they had two albums out on ABC or something.
They were a big Boston band, big New England band, a big touring band.
They broke around the same time as Jay Giles did.
Yeah.
Teddy,
Kind of a swaggering type Boston band.
Yeah.
But they, I mean, they didn't last too long. Well, they might have, but, you know, they peaked quick.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, so.
So welcome.
Thank you. It's funny being here without Mike Newman, because I'm always here with Mike.
We do have another mic
We do
here.
Have another mic,
And we have four mics in here that are a little bit different anyway.
Exactly. So, yeah, but so Mike and I, like I said, I do his show maybe once a month, once every few weeks, and we were actually supposed to be on yesterday, and we all know what happened.
Down,
well, but you're here now.
I am
And
here.
You're here on What's Happening.
Exactly.
So, say you do a little bit of everything. You do Connoisseur's Corner with Jordan Rich. You're in here with Mike, talking about restaurants, food,
So
radio.
Basically a food writer. I mean, I've been doing radio forever, since high school, college. I actually went to Tufts for a year. I wasn't on the radio at Tufts, and then I went to Suffolk, and I did radio at Suffolk for about 3 years, maybe 3.5 years. And then I kind of got out of it for a while, and then Mike brought me back into the studio here.
Okay, somebody be done.
And, you know, we do freeform music. I talk about restaurants, food. Mostly it's about the music, though. So I'm definitely a music geek and a food geek. So
well, but that means great having you in with a band that you actually played.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. That song, the Ring song, we were just talking about how I'm pretty sure, you know, it's a long time ago now, but I'm pretty sure when I was on WSFR I know we had that album, and I'm pretty sure we played them. At least that song and maybe a few others.
It's fun to hear. It's fun to hear you say it.
And it just feels like so long ago. I'm thinking of the Rumbles I went to, and, you know, there was Tribe, and there were all these different bands. Heretics, did they play?
Sure.
Yeah. TH and the Wreckage. And,
sure.
And I played a little bit, too. I wasn't at that level. I mean, I played at Johnny D's a little bit and the Blue Star back when it was a country western bar, which was interesting, to say the least. You know, a fight a night there.
Bucket of blood. Probably.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a bucket of blood. Now it's an Italian restaurant.
Bucket of sauce.
So, exactly. Bucket of red sauce. But back in college, I mean, I did radio, and we were totally into the local music scene. And it's, you know, it's still going pretty strong. There are people out there who are really, you know, helping get these bands out there. I mean, there have been some hits, some big hits lately with some radio stations going. Of course, the Phoenix is gone, and I mean, that hurt a lot. So, but
that's why we still have college radio. And,
yeah.
And, you know, we have MFO, we have WMWM. I just happen to be at both. And, you know, where you went.
Yeah, I tell people, I say, go left of the dial. There's so many great stations from, say, 92.3 or 92.1 left all the way back. And just incredible music, every kind of reggae and rock and jazz and never
blues,
gets boring.
And, yeah.
Blues. And a lot of, you know, interviews and talking. You know, some people think, oh, why do I want to listen to a show where people talk all the time? But there's a serious satellite, I think it's called, was it Volume, fairly new show, and it's all about talking with bands. And they don't play any music. And to me, it's just, it's addictive.
Yeah.
Because you hear these people like Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes talking for a half hour about everything. And it's just, I mean, music is, there's more to music than just the music itself. You get to learn about the people in it. Yeah.
So, well, if you had to throw out a great place to play and eat in Medford or in Salem, what would you say?
Medford. You won't find too many in Medford. Medford's mostly, it's restaurants. You know, if you're looking for a band.
Okay, or towards Boston.
You might want, Cambridge. One of the greatest is Atwood's Tavern. Yeah. Atwood's in Inman Square. They took up some of the slack when T.T. the Bear shut down. And they have, what is the band? It's, after Mark Sandman passed, it was
Vapors of Morphine.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. A good blues band. I think they played on MFO a little bit. And Atwood's is great because it has an outdoor patio. It's got a stage, good music, really good food, good beer. That's one of the better ones. I'm hearing that there's the B3, I believe it's called. It's at Berkeley. They just opened. So it's an international food. It's just all over the place. New American food. And they have music every night.
I don't know if Mark knows this, that Berkeley has 3 web stations. And if you're formerly part of Berkeley, they will play your music.
I did not know that.
Well, you now do.
Yes.
Thank you.
Matter of fact, we had a couple of members from Berkeley in a couple weeks ago, and it was great.
Susan Scotty and Margot, I forgot her name.
Margot,
yes. I'm a great slaughter of names.
Well, I'm sure it's spelled Margot.
Yeah.
But you know what? Talk after and get you in touch with them and get your music up there.
Thank you.
And what about in Salem?
Oh, we're talking about Salem. You know, there's a place at Notch Brewing, which is fairly new. They opened a brewery in Salem. I don't know if they have entertainment yet, but they're really starting to blossom. People are finding out about them. A little bit of food. It's really more a place to try microbrew beers. And they have a great outdoor patio on the little, I don't know if it's a river or canal. But I don't know if they have music yet, but if and when they do, that's going to be a really great place for that.
Yeah, I know we've got a couple friends who play the Village Tavern, the Lobster Shanty.
Oh, Diane Wolfe.
Brody Seaport.
You know, Brody's, yeah. I mean, you know, you have Vane, you have the JT and the Hounds, Black Hat Project, let's see.
Three-Toed Sloth.
Three-Toed Sloth.
Yeah.
Ted Slavikos, with his band, Pete Nintendo, just to name a few.
There was a place called In a Pig's Eye that used to have live entertainment.
It just changed.
And they
just
changed
Mystery
it.
Cafe.
Mercy Tavern.
And my co-host, Bob, went there. Ironically, he went there the day they opened, and he had to go back because he couldn't get in.
Yeah.
So
they really promoted the opening, and they claimed at the start, they said, best burger on the North Shore. I haven't been yet.
Well, you know, it's nice to claim something ahead of its time.
That's so true.
But sometimes that's the, you know, being on the cover of a certain magazine or, you know, winning a certain award before your time, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Lobster Shanty. I know one of the owners, Diane Wolfe. And I go there whenever I can. I live fairly far away from there, so I don't get there much, but she's great.
Have you been to the White Rose in Lynn?
Oh, the coffee house.
Yes.
No, she actually told me when they were getting ready to open. I have not been there
yet. I've been there for few different artists, and it's a nice place to go and visit.
And it's right downtown, right?
It's I forgot the name of the street that it's on. Mm-hmm. Parking is not that easy, but you know what? The music is always fantastic.
WMFO, Medford. Thank you. This has been What's Happening. I'm Mike.
I'm Aaron.
Mark Sutton.
And Bob Gifford.
And Mark Hurwitz.
And we will probably see you next week in this time slot.